From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I received a call today from the President of the United States at a little after noontime from Air Force One.
Thus began a press conference called hastily early Tuesday afternoon by now outgoing Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
And I've also spoken to White House Chief of Staff Kelly to ensure we have clarity as to the days ahead. What is most important is to ensure an orderly and smooth transition during a time that the country continues to face significant policy and national security challenges.
Tillerson said he would be leaving the job formally at the end of the month and functionally at the close of business on Tuesday.
Effective at the end of the day, I'm delegating all responsibilities of the Office of the Secretary to Deputy Secretary of State Sullivan. My commission as Secretary of State will terminate at midnight, March the 31st.
The new acting Secretary of State, John J. Sullivan, was confirmed as a deputy by the U.S. Senate on May 24th of last year. Prior to assuming office, he was a partner in Mayor Brown LLP, co-chair of that firm's national security practice. From 2010 to 2016, he was the chair of the U.S.-Iraq Business Dialogue, a governmental advisory committee on U.S. economic relations with Iraq. He served in two administrations in senior positions at the Justice, Defense, and Commerce Departments.
Between now and then, I will address a few administrative matters related to my departure and work towards a smooth and orderly transition for Secretary of State Designate Mike Pompeo.
Also on Tuesday, it was announced that CIA Director Mike Pompeo would replace Tillerson and that Pompeo would himself be replaced in turn as head of CIA by Deputy Director Gina Haspel. We'll have more on all of that in our next newscast. Tillerson pointed out that there were many foreign policy challenges facing the United States at this time. One of those has the U.S. and Russia squaring off dangerously. That's in Syria. On Monday, Syria was again the subject of discussion at the U.N. Security Council. This was Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia, Russia's permanent representative to the United Nations, responding to comments made by the U.S.'s permanent representative Nikki Haley at Monday's council session.
Thank you, Mr. President. Last time I promised that I would count how many times the permanent representative would mention in her next statement Russia, the name of Russia. And I counted this today, and it's 22 times. France followed that. They mentioned Russia 16 times. And the third place is occupied by the UK 12 times. Of course, it's not just the mentioning of the country that is important, but also the context in which this was done. The fact that this is being done, this is a political line, and this is caused not only and not so much by the concern about the humanitarian needs of the Syrians. We think it's important for everyone to understand that the Resolution 2401 is talking about an immediate ceasefire. That would have been utopian. What it's talking about is a preliminary agreement amongst parties as a precondition for sustained de-escalation in all difficult areas of Syria, not only eastern Ghouta. This is the only realistic way forward. And the resolution contained unequivocal requirements in that regard. And we are trying to facilitate that. And you have heard about that today and will hear about this today. The authorities in Damascus expressed their content with the contents of the resolution and the readiness to implement. At the same time, very rightly, they ask for an immediate cessation of attacks on the capital and all attempts to undermine the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of the country. The counter-terrorist operation, which is continued by the Syrian military, is not in contradiction with Resolution 2401. The government of Syria has every right to try and remove the threat to the safety of its citizens. The suburbs of Damascus cannot remain a hotbed of terrorism. And it is the continued attempts of terrorism to undermine the cessation of hostilities regime that is the reason why the highly tense situation in Syria continues. And of course, the most difficult area in this regard is eastern Ghouta. The Cairo agreements of 2017 about de-escalation in eastern Ghouta provided the fighters with an opportunity to become involved in political settlement. They did not take this opportunity, and they still have not separated themselves from terrorists, because what is being done by the groups is being coordinated from a single headquarters, which is being led by Jabhat al-Nusra. We know for a fact that they have an active radio exchange, and they discuss inter alia their plans for shelling the humanitarian corridors. Why is it that it's just only now that they have started talking about their readiness to expel al-Nusra from Eastern Ghouta? And why are we the only ones to ask that question? We have answered the question ourselves, saying that we have suspicions that Nusra is being kept specifically for very special political purposes. And in this case, in order to maintain a dangerous hotbed of resistance very close to the Syrian capital. But we are continuously being told tales about how very few terrorism there supposedly are in Eastern Ghouta. So who is going to verify the implementation of the resolution by armed groups? Who will be held responsible for this? Please don't tell us that the regime is responsible for everything, as well as the regime in inverted commas, as well as Russia and Iran. Such ideological statements are not serious in within the course of the professional discussion we're having here in the Security Council. How are you going to be held responsible for the implementation of 2401? How are you doing that? What responsibility do you carry for supporting the fighters that you're extending support to? In the wake of Resolution 2401, with the participation of Russia, we established daily 5-hour humanitarian pauses, opened the checkpoint of Mukhayam al-Fedin for the peaceful citizens and the fighters with their families. They were guaranteed safety. They were given transport throughout the whole route. After that, the Syrian authorities opened another checkpoint, Mleha Jisrain, in the southern part of Eastern Ghouta. This had medical positions, hot food distribution points, and buses are standing by. But fighters continued shelling the central areas of Damascus and the suburbs in a massive way. They release tens of mines in a day, and this leads to deaths and wounded people and many destructions. Since resolution was passed, the more than 100 people died from this, and a considerably higher number were wounded. More than once, hospitals Tishrin and Bayrouni were shelled, as well as a medical center in Ar-Rihan. These are true hospitals, genuine hospitals, not headquarters of fighters who very frequently they claim are hospitals. Snipers are being actively used, and we know all of this for a fact. The death of any number of civilians in an armed conflict is a tragedy. But our delegation has always been interested in the origin of the statistical data that's being used with the United Nations. Given how politicized the subject is, it's very important. In Eastern Ghouta, very frequently we hear assessments of the losses among the civilians. We expect that in future reports, what we will see is the source of this data, how reliable it is, and who exactly is meant by the trustworthy sources on the ground. All of the past days, the extremists forbade peaceful citizens to leave the areas that they are besieging and stopped any attempt to resist them, this up to and including demonstration executions. This is also something that we know for a fact. They're constantly striking on corridors and checkpoints, including during the humanitarian pauses. On the 9th of March, they shelled a refugees column, and once again they undermined this evacuation process. They intensified the use of tunnels in order to provoke the Syrian military. And the exits of the tunnels are in the area of public buildings, first and foremost, mosques, hospitals, and markets. They increased prices on foodstuffs, and at the same time, they requisitioned food, water, medicine, and mobile telephones from the people. They create sources for fire in buildings, and they use people as human shields. They mine the areas which are right next to the line of contact. They carry out searches, and they remove the brochures, passes, which are distributed by the government. And those who try to resist those repressions. People are trying to resist this. They organize protests, and they become involved in clashes. On the 1st of March, the terrorists executed 11 participants of such a protest. Today, there was a major protest in Kaprubach. The first meeting, the exit of what took place on 9th of March, where together with Russian officers, 52 people left the area, 26 of them are children. Some of the fighters also want to leave the area, but the field commanders threaten them with execution. On the 9th of March, as a result of long and painstaking negotiations with the participation of officers from the Russian Center of Reconciliation, for the first time from the enclave through the humanitarian corridors, upon their request, 13 fighters were taken out. Jaish al-Islam is something that we negotiate with in order to have an agreement on the second set of fighters to leave that area. We also had a meeting with the leaders of Velak al-Rahman, where they were given a demand to immediately separate themselves from Jamaat al-Nusra. But according to the information we have, the fighters from that group decided to continue their armed struggle by force recruiting men from the peaceful population to their ranks. A couple of words about organizing the humanitarian convoy into Douma on the 1st of March. The government of Syria and the Russian military carried out a comprehensive support for this. We provided a humanitarian corridor, ensured the safety going through that. We monitored the situation. At the same time, what we witnessed is a numerous examples of disorganized activity by humanitarians. According to our information, the UN staff extended and delayed this action and created real security risks. At the time when the convoy was being put together, they tried to place undeclared medical supplies into it. And they spent about 2 hours on a meeting with the leaders of the so-called local councils. They disseminated unreliable information about aerial strikes in the area or offloading. And this information was very happily taken up by some delegations here today, even though what happened was one shelling strike from the position of an armed grab. They also were completely unresponsive to the request of peaceful civilians to leave the enclaves. Nonetheless, 13 people, out of them 5 children, were taken out. It was curious for me to then read one of the field commanders from Harar al-Sham, who expressed with irony his gratitude for the humanitarian pause on the day, which allows the fighters to regroup and prepare traps for the Syrian military. The 9th of March activity was carried out successfully with the assistance of the Russian military. Nonetheless, in the eastern Ghouta is not the only area to which 2401 applies. In the past 2 weeks, Nusra and other armed groups also shelled the Hama province on many than one occasion. Their victims because of the shelling of Hura Kafra and Idlib. And the clashes between the groups there led to the threat of a certain number of medical facilities being closed. What we also notice is that Nusra has become more active in the southern areas of de-escalation, which could have to do with the fact that they're being supplied weapons from the outside. Abril is a very difficult situation there. The Syrian authorities gave the permission to provide assistance to the Rugban camp on the territory, which is illegally held by the Americans surrounding a military base. And we'd like to find out what the UN is doing on that. Our thinking is that the humanitarian assistance is something that will be done by a respected entity such as the International Committee on Red Cross and the Syrian Arab Red Crescent. We expect also that the UN mission on the humanitarian assistance into Raqqa, bombed by the coalition, will be sent as quickly as possible, without delay. And the question to the UN is as follows: when will this mission take place? We understand very well the rationale behind the disinformation campaign. The goal here is to create the public assistance on the use of the Syrian authorities of toxic substances. In the meantime, we and the Syrian party have our fears that what is being prepared is a provocation in order to then blame the Syrian authorities that they're carrying out chemical attacks. According to the data we have, al-Nusra used chlorine in eastern Ghouta on the 5th of March. 30 people suffered from that. All of this is being done in order to prepare the ground for the unilateral use of force against sovereign Syria. And we have heard hints of that in the statements of some delegations today. Basically, steps are being weighed which could hit regional stability very, very hard. And at the same time, we know that the territories that used to be under the armed groups have chemical warehouses, but the UN specialized UN entities do react to the complaints about this by Syrian authorities very slowly. We will continue our efforts to carry out to implement 24/0, but we request that some of our colleagues travel their own part of the road and exert genuine pressure on the groups that they sponsor or support. They keep calling on Russia, creating false impression that this resolution is only to us. And in conclusion, Mr. President, let me say that today, in the second half of the day, four members of the Security Council are holding an informal ARIA meeting with the goal of making sure that the opposition voices are heard. And the media will be present in numbers, it is planned. We would like to first and foremost point out that it is unacceptable to use the UN resources for politicized goals. ARIA formula meetings were created for something which is completely different. What is behind this is a desire for organizers to exert pressure on the Syrian governments and those who help them fight terrorism. In our view, in order to have a full picture, what we need to do is listen to the peoples of Raqqa and those who are in Rukban camp. And also in eastern Ghouta, we can find very numerous people who would be happy to launch an appeal to save them from the presence of extremists. Thank you.
The last speaker to be heard at Monday's Security Council session about Syria was Syria's permanent representative, Ambassador Bashar al-Jaafari.
Shukran.
Thank you. I welcome the Secretary General, and I would like to allude to what he mentioned at the outset of his briefing, that the General Secretariat does not have all the information necessary to accurately analyze and evaluate the situation in Syria due to the fact that the UN is not present all over and throughout Syria. This is exactly what was said by the General Secretariat with polite humbleness, as they mentioned that they are not privy to all the information relevant to the Syrian situation, notwithstanding the fact that the UN has an OCHA office in Damascus and there are dozens of UN agencies operating in Syria. In addition to 13 international non-governmental organizations also operating in Syria. However, some of our colleagues in this Security Council who have shut down their embassies in Damascus now are totally disconnected from credible information, and they found a trove in information of what is known as open resources. Thus, they provided us with myriad of information that would never serve the interest of the Syrian people or your interest in such important and significant discussion, because this disinformation might poison the atmosphere and feud sedition regarding the role of the Security Council, which is mandated to maintain international peace and security. Mr. President, the Syrian government stands ready to seriously engage with positive international initiatives which serve the interests of the Syrian people, especially ending the bloodletting throughout Syria. Throughout Syria, I'm here quoting the Resolution 2401. My country expressed its satisfaction with Resolution 2401, especially the positive directions contained therein. And in this regard, we do confirm that we have taken all the following procedures to deliver our people in Eastern Ghouta from their suffering. First, immediately after the adoption of Resolution 2401, hostilities were ceased on a daily basis. And until this very moment, from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. Damascus local time, with the aim to deliver humanitarian aid and to ensure unimpeded and safe exit of civilians from the areas controlled by terrorist groups. Secondly, two safe humanitarian corridors, are open for civilians wishing to exit the enclave. Third, two joint United Nations ICRC convoys in collaboration with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent have been sent to Eastern Ghouta on the 5th and 9th of March. Notwithstanding the foregoing, all these procedures have always been countered by the armed organizations present in the enclave, which continued, incited by their paymasters, and some of them, unfortunately, are members to the Security Council. They were targeting the civilians in Damascus starting 2018, as they fired more than 2,499 missiles and mortar, which claimed the lives of 70 civilians and injured 556 people. These organizations denied our people in Eastern Ghouta exit in order to continue to use them as human shields and a material for humanitarian and media blackmail. They even targeted those who managed to escape towards the two corridors by firing bullets and missiles. And the latest incident was on 8th of March, when what is known as Failaka Rahman, which is a terrorist arm of the petty state of Qatar in Syria, targeted a convoy for civilians, which was driving towards one of the corridors, a matter that led to high casualties among civilians. And by the way, that terrorist organization, Failaka Rahman, was hailed by some of you because of its readiness to implement Resolution 2401. It was rather presented as moderate Syrian opposition. And there was a letter that was signed by that organization with other terrorist organizations to the Secretary General, is propagated also by some of the members to the Security Council. And this is the modus operandi of the Security Council with terrorist groups. Mr. President, the procedures taken by the Syrian government are not limited to Eastern Ghouta, because during the last days we undertook inter alia a number of procedures. First of all, we requested the United Nations and a number of humanitarian organizations to immediately send a mission to investigate the humanitarian situation in Raqqa, which was destroyed by the international coalition led by the U.S. Secondly, to approve the operation of humanitarian convoys to Rukban camp, provided that this aid is to be delivered and distributed by the Syrian Arab Red Crescent and the Red Cross exclusively, and not by the authorities of the U.S. occupation or forces or the terrorist groups in Rukban. Third, 2 days ago, the SARC managed to obtain the governmental approvals to send convoys to Ghouta, Rekha, Afrin, and Rukban. Until this very date, they did not manage to send the convoy to Rukban and Afrin, as the United Nations failed to ensure the necessary safeguards by the U.S. and Turkish occupation forces. This is the main reason. Ladies and gentlemen, with every feat and advance by the Syrian army against terrorist groups in any given area, the country sponsoring terrorism are very fast to launch heated disinformation campaign to distract the world from the aggression, terrorism, and occupation against Syria. This confirms that these countries have never been keen on the lives of citizens and civilians, but they were nonetheless keen on protecting their investment in terrorism, as was said by the ex-Prime Minister of Qatar. This in order to recycle the terrorism in other parts of Syria. This behavior that I have alluded to is not limited to states sponsoring terrorism. Unfortunately, it is even demonstrated by some of the senior officials of the General Secretariat. We hoped that the Secretary General, especially in light of the second preambular paragraph of Resolution 2401, we hoped that it would have provided an unequivocal legal qualification of the crimes committed by the so-called international coalition led by the United States against our people in Syria, and the procedures ensuring ending this aggression. We also hoped that the Secretary General would provide us with unequivocal legal qualification of the acts of the invading Turkish forces to a very dear part of our territory, especially against our people in Afrin, and the procedures ensuring ending this Turkish aggression, as well as an unequivocal and clear legal description of the presence of the U.S. forces on the Syrian territories without the approval of the Syrian government, and the procedures ensuring ending this occupation. Mr. President, the Arab Republic of Syria reaffirms its right to defend its citizens and fighting terrorism according to the relevant Security Council resolutions, especially the second operative paragraph of Resolution 2401, and to fight all those who practice, fund, and support terrorism, and to work towards the restoration of peace, stability, and security, and to rebuild all that was damaged and destroyed by terrorism. Finally, I have listened to the U.S. representative, who is again and again leveling charges against my country, and that its country will undertake procedures against my country, notwithstanding the international legitimacy, exactly as they have done when they bombarded Al-Shu'ayrat air base in my country last year. All these irresponsible and provocative statements and declarations, and which run counter to the UN Charter, is very direct incitement to the terrorist groups to use the chemical weapons and to fabricate again all the evidence and proofs, as they have done previously, to accuse the Syrian army. I would like to remind the representative of the United States that the JIM has refused and denied taking any samples from Al-Shu'ayrat airbase, because if it had done that, it would have categorically proved that the Syrian government is totally irresponsible and should not be held accountable to what has happened in Ain Shaykhun. And actually, what happened from the U.S. party is aggression. I do call upon the representatives of the U.S., U.K., and France to put an end to their violation of the Security Council resolutions related to fighting terrorism, and that their governments should stop sponsoring the terrorist groups in my country and to stop providing them with a political umbrella to continue their crimes against the Syrian people. It's high time, Mr. Chair, that the U.S. administration took lessons from its mistakes and to put an end to these mistakes. Isn't it enough what they have done in Vietnam, Iraq, Somalia, Yemen, invoking very cheap lies that have been already condemned by the international public opinion? And in this regard, I do remember Najib Mahfouz, something that was said by Najib Mahfouz, the Nobel laureate. And I quote, they are liars. They know they are liars. And they know that we know that they are liars. However, they still lie, and very loudly so. Mr. President, in conclusion, the Russian Center for Reconciliation in Syria said that street war has started in Ghouta after requests of dissent by Failaq Rahman from Al-Nusra Front. The current and these wars that are taking place right now impede the exit by civilians, and thus they are forced to find safe haven under the ground. Thank you, Mr. President.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.